Accession number 28653, Mr. Francis Lucas, Reel 3. Now, what happened when you got to Belfast? What, you know, when you first arrived there, where were you sent within Belfast? Or were you in a camp? Or?
No. When we first arrived in Belfast, there was already preparations made for our reception, and I must say they were very well organised and very efficient. And we were distributed amongst a number of church halls and other community halls throughout Belfast. And things went very, very smoothly.
Was the whole division moving over at that time, or was it just your unit?
I think there were other units moving in as well. As far as we were concerned, it worked very smoothly indeed. And I think our lot were divided between about three or four different halls that were already well prepared, and the hospitable Belfast people, they were waiting there, their ladies, the teas and buns and so on, and you were given a wonderful reception when we arrived in Belfast.
I mean, were you aware of the troubles in Belfast? I mean, there weren't troubles like that, but there was a conflict between the religious communities. Were you aware of that?
Not in any way at the first stage, only very much later when friends I made there of local people gave one details of past history.
We'll come to that as we.
Sure.
So, what happened next then? You move in, you're in your billets. What happens next?
What happened next? Strangely enough, there was not a great deal at first of active corporate work. Gather together for marches. And for again some marching training, and then we're also taken to other parts of Northern Ireland, where we joined together with other units again on exercises. But again, in a way, the training was very, very relaxed.
Now, had they started any signals elements of the training? They hadn't done any AMROTH, I don't think so. Had they started sort of teaching?
None whatever. There's no specific signals training.
So you're just doing sort of normal infantry training?
That's right, yes.
Now, so what's the next thing that you... Sort of a slow start?
That's right, it would be a slow start. And really, one was integrating with the local people.
Yeah, that perhaps is the time to talk about then. Again, you'd have a religious perspective on an interest in what was happening. Who did you get in touch with first?
As a matter of their getting in touch with you, practically all the churches were very, very generous, and they would have available clubs and so on where you were very welcome, and people would link up with you, so you would go to their homes, and the churches were very, of all types, were very, very proactive in making you welcome and receiving you almost open arms.
And were you attending services or organising your own services again? Or
there in the morning, of course, we had formal church parades in the main churches. And then for the rest of the day, it was up to you. You had your own activities and so on. But we would go to particular churches as a group. And in the end, we linked up with a group at a place called the Iron Mission Hall in West Belfast. It's still going now. And I've been in touch with them recently, etc. And they were very, very hospitable. They happened to have a Welsh pastor, and so that helped to have, indeed, an even closer link. And again, the Welsh lads formed a choir there. And their singing was just fantastic. Didn't matter two hoots what they believed, whether they believed everything or nothing. Boy, could they sing their Welsh hymns. It was wonderful.
And you gave a testimony there. It seems to have been very successfully, you know, to your own belief.
Yes, yes, incredible. Yes, we got to be very well known there, of course, and I was invited to give my testimony, to simply tell how I came to faith. That I did. The place was packed, I remember, and to my great surprise, I don't know, I suppose I had an ability beyond my normal ability, and the effect upon the congregation was so much that the pastor felt that it was wrong to continue the service in its normal way. And so a session of special prayer was held, and the service was disbanded. I look back now, and I'm astounded at what happened. And all I can say is that God, in a remarkable way, had used me for that occasion. I'm quite sincere in saying that.
Were you having any success in bringing more of your soldiers to religion, the people you were serving alongside?
In particular, to those who might have been regarded as being on the fringe, to those perhaps whose parents and whose homes had been sympathetic to it, to those perhaps who'd wandered away to the distress of their parents, etc., they seemed to be incredibly encouraged and grouped together. I think they were amazed to find this element within their army group.
Now, anything else about the training? How did the training develop?
Again, limited to weapons drill, limited to marching. The actual army training was not very intensive. We were there, it seemed, more or less as an occupying group who were very welcome, and it was very much a social situation. You all linked up with Irish families over there, etc. And so, again, the specific training was, I must say, a very low profile.
What did you think of the religious divide after your links with the church, and what did you think of the situation with the Catholics and the rest of it?
Thought it a very sad situation. Felt it to be a very unnecessary situation. Felt that primarily its source was political rather than matter of religious faith. And it was only later, of course, when you were told about past days, etc., that you realise that primarily it was territorial and political, really, more than religious. It just happened to divide down the religious lines.
Was there any unrest amongst Catholics, or any attacks made on British soldiers at the time that you were there, or were any precautions had to be taken?
No. We were just advised, put it like this, to be careful, whatever that may or may not have meant. But no, we had no problems of any sort. Matter of fact, we were quite nonplussed to find the policemen there carrying revolvers. That to us was entirely unexpected and out of touch with what we expected police to be.
Now, so how does things develop? I mean, you're there quite a while. You're there all through the summer.
That's right.
and into the winter from one.
Indeed, yes. I think one would regard the period as being, what should I say, social. You felt it was more linking with the people themselves as any military situation. But apart from time to time, you were taken out for drill sessions. Really, it was a very relaxed, friendly period. And that was felt by, I think, everyone in the unit. So we all thoroughly enjoyed the time in Belfast.
Now, what happens next then? What's the next thing you remember, the major event? Because you leave in January, don't you?
Yes.
41.
Yes. We did.
Anything else about...
We gradually realised that there was indeed serious army work to be done. Many rumours circulated and so on, and we realised that our time in Belfast was now pretty limited. And we were given interviews to ascertain what areas that we should be recruited into and what units we will finally go to. That happened over quite a long period.
Do you remember your interview?
Yes, I do indeed. The senior sergeant who initially interviewed me was himself a radio technician, and very soon in our interview he realized I knew at least a little about it. And he said to me very early on, I'll tell you what, we will send you on what they called a foreign signals course. There are vacancies there, and I reckon you can cope.
What signals course?
Foreman is called foreman of signals, and so on. I knew very little about...
So you hadn't done any of this training in Belfast, but that's where they decided
that. No, none whatever.
So, and you were reasonably pleased for that special...
I was indeed. Indeed. And I was advised I'd be sent to the signal school at Catterick for a training. That was a five-month course there. And so I... look forward to that. And after a period of leave, I arrived in Catterick.
And that's January 1941?
It would be, yes.
Now, what was the situation when you arrived there?
One was overwhelmed by the size of Catterick camp and the activity which was taking place. You were a bit confused as where you had to go and... who you had to come into contact with, but that was soon resolved. And then there were 30 of us, I think I'm right in saying, on this particular five-month formal signals course. All I can say is it was of a very high standard.
Now, how did the training start? What was it you had to learn? You presumably started almost from scratch.
It started from basics. Assuming that you knew nothing but had the potential. And so mathematics was, basic mathematics was the first of a series of courses, and then of course it developed into what I may call simple to advanced subjects in electrical technology. And I must say, the lectures were of a university standard. Some of us struggled quite a bit, but the standard of the teaching was absolutely first class. The lecturers were university lecturers, and with very few exceptions, they were absolutely fine. And one was really put on your mettle. you would devote yourself completely to it, otherwise you would drop out.
And this was first mathematics and then basic signalling.
That's right.
Well,
yes.
Electricity, sorry.
That's right, basic electrical theory and so on.
And you managed just about to keep up?
I managed just about to keep up. I wasn't brilliant at all. Boy, we had a few very brilliant lads amongst us, and they were quite exceptional. But I was, I suppose, run-of-the-mill, struggling, but enjoying it and keeping up.
And how far with electrical theory were you going? I mean, into...
Shall I say, to the limits of advanced technology, which would be known on the university courses in that day. Things have progressed enormously since, you appreciate.
But yeah. But as, to the limits of the university student's knowledge at the time.
Absolutely.
That's perfectly clear.
Yes.
And so that's the theoretical side.
Yes.
And I presume you'd be taking notes and were there
oh,
tests?
Yes, indeed. One would. And a good deal of private study was required and necessary.
You had, presumably, textbooks and things to assist you?
Yes, yes.
Now, what about the practical side? Were you introduced that at the same time? Or
yes, we had practical labs, and so you did a fair amount of practical work there. Yes, basically linked with fundamental electrical technology and telephony. And so the emphasis was always towards communication technology.
So what kind of laboratory work in telephony? What sort of experiments and things were you
doing? Literally experimenting with the simple circuits initially, or communication circuits and so on, limited, now one sees, by the technology of the day, which is very different to today. So all the basic radio, we count the radio, and telephonic communications. So primarily, communication, it grew into communication technology. That was the object of it.
Now, would you have to learn some
grounding in the fundamentals first.
Now, would you have to learn Morse? Code, which is actually an older technology, but a signal is sometimes...
absolutely. Yes, you had to. Fortunately, they segregated you, and not everyone had learned Morse code. Fortunately, I didn't, and was allocated to the more technical side. And I was relieved at that, because I'd never mastered Morse code.
You think you'd have found it difficult?
It was just not me. Yes, I would have found it difficult. Yes.
So you were concentrating more on the what was going on inside the wirelesses or radio.
That's a good way to describe it. Exactly.
And what about things like valve technology and things like that? Would you go as far as how to understand how the valve works, or did you just know how to put the valve in the radio in the right place?
Oh my goodness, no. You had to know about how the valve worked, the whole technology of it. Indeed, that's quite so.
Now, it's quite an intensive course.
It was very intensive. The most intensive course I've ever had in my life. But it was challenging. There's a great group there, and you enjoyed it.
And did you have time for religion there?
The thing is, where I was concerned, it was a dual situation. And I very soon linked up there with Sands Soldiers' Home, which was fundamentally religious organization who provided superb canteen facilities. It was quite outstanding. The Sands Soldiers.
Sands, S-A-N-D-S.
S-A-N-D-S. It's still going to this day, I believe.
No, I've not heard of these. Tell us a bit more detail about what they did and how you involved yourself with them.
Well, first of all, it It was a large canteen, actually too. It had an extension, which was a bathing pool, etc. It supplied the usual range of canteen goodies, etc. The facilities were absolutely first class. They had a good dedicated staff who treated you not as soldiers, but just as friends and human beings. And so it was very, very popular, the Sand Soldiers' Home. But there's another side to it. And the other side was not pushed in any way. But you became aware of it if you had a natural interest in this other side. And they soon became aware of those lads who would have that interest. And so we had contact soon made with the folk who were running it. I remember in particular a Mrs. Harris, who was a lovely lady, and those who she got on with, she called her boys, her sons, and so on. And there was what we call the quiet room, which was another part of the home, and to which those who had that inclination could go and literally be mothered and so on in this quiet room. And it was a place where you could unburden yourself, you would find encouragement, you would find a real deep friendship and so on. And I have, incidentally, written one of my poems about the quiet room and so on. So to someone with a faith, it was just tremendous, and the other side of life there.
But your average soldiery could also use it, if they behaved themselves, as a swimming pool and a canteen.
Oh, absolutely.
And they might not even realise this was all going on.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yes. Mm. As I say, the practical facilities were first class.
So that was about any other activities, religious activities there, or was it mainly centred around the Sanders home?
Well, there were, again, the usual church parades, and there was a local Methodist church to which we paraded, or our section paraded, the Catholic Camps of Ars Place, paraded on Sunday mornings, and that was to a local Methodist church, and I remember the minister there, a Reverend Sheriff. And the Reverend Sheriff was a lovely fellow, and again, he had that sense of easy rapport with lads in the forces, and so there was that side to it. So that was a more formal church parade side, but again, to a very friendly, welcoming place.
Now, anything else happened while you were at Qatar? You were there about 5 months.
Oh,
so January to May-ish.
Oh, my goodness, of course. Wow, it was there, of course. I got married, wasn't it? Yes.
Sorry?
A thing one shouldn't forget, it was during my time there that I got married.
Now tell us the story of what, because some soldiers decided not to get married to sort of hold back in case they got killed. Or
that's right. Yeah.
What were your thoughts as you approached the whole question of getting married?
Ah, it's very interesting. I had been courting, I suppose you would call it, in those days, my girlfriend Dillis. Was a Welsh girl.
Had you met her in when you were at...
Yes, I'd known her for many years before, but things became more serious when I had to leave for the army. And gradually, this question of closely linked together became an issue with us, and her view was, whatever the future risks, And she said, I accept them. I want to know that I'm one with you. And so the final result was that we did decide that we would take the jump and get married. It worked out conveniently in one way, because within easy reach of the Catholic camp, there's a town of Richmond in Yorkshire. And we had no desire, as many folk did, to be married in army uniform. And in Richmond, Yorkshire, there was, I forget which one, but one of the leading outfitters and so on. And for the princely sum of about £3.50 £3, what was it then in those days? Anyway, I was able to get a complete appropriate suit and so on, fitted out for the wedding, etc. And so the wedding was all organized down in Wales, where Dilys lived, and organized to the last detail. There was just one gap in the arrangements, and that was myself having to come down from Capric Camp, complete with my wedding suit and so on, and there was a slot there, my size, which I slipped into in all the wedding arrangements. And so I had no effective part in them. I was just the key to them, and so on. I had 3 days' leave only, and so on. And so there couldn't be any time wasted. And so I remember I came down, I was met at the station, and so on. And then I was just put in this appropriate slot, and there we are. And in 3 days, I was married the day after I arrived.
And this is what, June 1941?
It would have been, that's right. Yep, yeah, June 41. And we're married. We went for an overnight honeymoon, pretty well, to one of the friends we'd made when we're down in Amroth, etc. I think at a place called Stepaside. I'm not sure about that. And had, as I said, a very brief honeymoon, and then back to Catterick again.
Now, on the completion of your course, which is the same month, back end of June,
yeah.
You were promoted. Now, is it to see your foreman of signals, CQMS, Company Quartermaster Sergeant?
That's right.
And what did that mean? That's quite a promotion from nothing to...
It was quite a big jump, yes. Yes, it was quite a big jump. But nevertheless, I welcomed it very positively. I think I can say that during this initial period, when I was in Amroth, in the midst of there, and then in Belfast and in Catterick, I'd obviously matured very, very much. And although I was a shy young lad when I went into the forces, obviously I had matured sufficiently to warrant that rank and soon to know how to use it.